Hello, everybody. We're back today to talk about Doctor Who again, the second special. Today is December 2nd, 2023. And today, the second special with David Tennant and Catherine Tate is coming out, or just came out. I have not watched it yet. So the second special is Wild Blue Yonder. I just rewatched The Star Beast on Disney Plus as a preparation. I very much enjoyed it, even on that second on another watch. I've now listened to a number of people talk about and critique it, watched it again a couple times. I find it to be a very enjoyable episode still. A big critique I have heard about the Star Beast, now with a little bit of time, is that people found that ending where Donna and Rose tell the Doctor, "You as a male presenting Time Lord would never understand this, but we are choosing just to give up the power." They found it a little hokey or a little too much on the nose, maybe. It doesn't bother me. I get what they're saying, that it does feel a little like the stakes, minimizing the stakes, maybe, by making it that easy to solve the problem. But I like that it was, I kind of enjoy that it was a simple solution, that you could just choose to give away that power. And I don't think that the Doctor can't see it because he's a male presenting Time Lord again. And that, like, Jodie Whittaker's Doctor would have understood it better because she was a female presenting Doctor. I feel like that binary thing I don't love. So I take that critique. I didn't see it when I first saw it, but now that I've watched the episode, but now that I've heard people talk about it, I kind of get that critique of, like, that being a little off, especially with the Doctor having just been a woman, you know, 60 minutes ago or something, whatever he said. So I take that critique in. I think, though, that it would work. It still works as the concept, because I don't think the Doctor, no matter what gender they are presenting as, would never see the solution of voluntarily giving up their sort of Time Lord powers. They would not be able to do that. And having Donna and Rose being able to say, "I'm giving this power up and I am going with just being a human again," as such a simple, clean solution. I still like it as a simple, clean solution. I just don't think they necessarily had to put the gender into it the way that they did. So I will take that critique, that I think it works without the gender aspect. The gender aspect doesn't bother me so much, in that I see it as mostly like Donna poking at the Doctor, and it's for fun. It's not a serious, like, you can't see it because you're a man. It was, you know, kind of a joke. So it doesn't bother me, but I get the critique, and I do agree that it didn't need to be there. But most of the rest of the episode I very strongly enjoyed. And I am hoping to see, but it seems like Donna and Rose got to keep the memories, which is a really cool thing, that Donna got her memories back, because that was always such a tragic ending for her, so I'm very happy about that. And I still found The Star Beast to be a very enjoyable episode, and I was very happy to watch it, and I think it's fabulous. So that ends on the cliffhanger of they could be anywhere in time and space, and the TARDIS is exploding because Donna threw coffee on the console. So, I mean, I agree, coffee's gross, so I don't like coffee. So, the TARDIS is having a temper tantrum because they don't like coffee. And here we are. So, I'm getting ready to watch Wild Blue Yonder, and I'm super excited. I really have no idea what's going to happen. I've seen almost nothing. I saw a little trailer, but it didn't really tell me anything about what this episode is going to be. So I'm very excited. You know, the first episode, Star Beast, I feel like we saw a lot in the trailer. We knew about Beep the Meep. And I didn't know, like, this exact details of the story, but I knew that Beep the Meep was going to be a villain somehow and stuff like that. And you knew Rose was going to be there, and you knew Donna was somehow going to get her memories back. And, like, you had a lot of idea of, like, plot points that were going to obviously happen throughout the story. But I feel like for this next one, at least what I've seen, which I have not gone looking for, like, behind the scenes and details yet, because I want to watch the episode fresh, but from what I've seen of just the trailer and everything, I really have no idea what this episode is going to be. I believe this is the one that they put out, the creator put out that it was going to be a very scary episode. And I'm not a big fan of horror, so we'll see how that goes. But actually, that's a lie. I am into psychological horror more. I'm not into blood and gore, which Doctor Who usually doesn't have. So it could be very interesting. But I think this is the one they said you've never seen an episode like this, and it's super scary. So I'm not sure about the scariness, but I'm very excited about the episode. So I will be back after having watched it, and I'll let you know what I think. I am super excited. Yay, Doctor Who being back. And we're back with Doctor Who and the Wild Blue Yonder. I have mixed feelings. It was a fun episode. I definitely enjoyed watching it. I don't know. I'm interested to see with the ending. I like that they're tying all the episodes together, but it leaves us on another cliffhanger that I'm like, what is going to happen next? I need to know. And I don't right now. So I didn't come off it with like this great warm feeling because of that cliffhanger, but I will get to that in a minute. Quick reminder for everybody that this is all spoiler heavy. I will be going into all the details of the special Doctor Who episode, which starts off in 1666, where the Doctor and Donna meet Sir Isaac Newton and somehow change the name of Gravity to Mavity, which is, they get a callback of that later, which is weird. So apparently Gravity is now called Mavity. I don't know, but they land on top of an apple tree with Sir Isaac Newton, who is not yet a sir, sitting under the apple tree with an apple hits his head, and he's like, of course, and he's gonna write down his theories. And then, of course, the TARDIS lands on top of the apple tree and puts a bunch more apples on his head. So that's fun for everyone. And they get a little historical moment with Sir Isaac Newton. And Donna has to make her joke with the doctors trying to make her stop. And that Sir Isaac Newton, you're the type of person who wouldn't, who would understand the gravity of the situation. And then, oops, sorry, gotta go, because this TARDIS is still out of control and flying all over the place. So then it zooms out of time and space again. And it leaves Sir Isaac Newton saying, what a delightful word. Shavity, havity, mavity. When it should be gravity. Like, normally you would think him get gravity, and then, the doctor is the one who gave the word gravity, but instead, the doctor might have just changed gravity into mavity. Unclear. All right. So then, the rest of the episode. So that was just like a throwaway scene that happens before the title sequence. And then they get on. The TARDIS is still zooming around space on fire. They end up jumping out of it onto a spaceship. And the TARDIS then like spews fire out. And the doctor has to get the TARDIS to rebuild itself using his sonic screwdriver, which he like puts into the door, and then the TARDIS disappears. So the Doctor and Donna are stuck on this spaceship, and the TARDIS is gone, and he doesn't have his sonic screwdriver. He just has his non-sonic screwdriver, which he was a little joke he makes in the beginning that he's got a sonic screwdriver and a non-sonic screwdriver, which means just a screwdriver. So that is what they've got. And they are on this space station with no signs of life. And it's saying these words that they can't understand because they don't have the TARDIS, and so the translation thing isn't happening. And the doctor makes a joke that he knows a bunch of languages, like 700 or something. I don't remember the exact number. But not this one. So he doesn't know this language. And so he's going around figuring out things on the spaceship. They find like the cockpit. There's no pilot. He's kind of gets into the computer system and is able to sort of figure out something with the base code and figure out numbers, which will come in handy later, that he figured out the numbers in this weird language. And so he figures out the numbers. He's figured out that there's no signs of life. And he also figured out that the ship has been set into like this neutral thing and is just laying around and not doing anything. And so he's trying to get the ship back working, turn it on again, basically. And he also then at this point realizes that they are out on the edge of the universe, farther out than he's ever been before, apparently. And so far out that there aren't any even like signs of stars. The light hasn't reached them yet, which is interesting. Like how far away you have to be for now the stars of the universe to be able to have reached you. And he said that the spaceship must have fallen through a wormhole, and that's how it got out this far. Anyway, so they're stuck on this spaceship out in the middle of absolutely nothing. You can't even see any stars. I'm not clear on how he knows which direction the universe is even in, but he points like, "Hey, you live that way," for Donna. So he knows somehow. I don't know how. And then we get into really more of the plot. So there's this kind of bumping sound they keep hearing from the cockpit. They don't know what it is. And then they head out to try and get the ship running again. And the doctor and Donna split up. So the doctor leaves Donna with a specific task to start doing something, and he goes off to another part of the ship to work on it. And I think they did a really good job with this next part with like the editing of it. Like you figure it out, but it also like when so Donna's in the room, the doctor wanders off to go do something, and then you're watching the doctor there, and then you cut back to Donna, and the doctor walks back in, and he starts talking to her, and they're doing, and she's continuing her task or whatnot. And you don't notice immediately, but it begins to feel a little off. And then it cuts back to the doctor in his other room, and Donna walks in, and then you're got it confirmed that there's somebody else there. Like, right, the doctor who's with Donna right now is not the real doctor. The Donna who's walked in with the doctor is not the real Donna. And so they're each have like fake people talking to them and asking them questions and stuff, and it takes them a minute to each of them realize that something is wrong about the doppelgangers that have walked in on them. And they do this weird thing where the arms are too long and they have a hard time like keeping the size and shape correct, and so they both have these really long arms dragging on the ground that is pretty hokey CGI, but I think it works. And so the doctor and Donna both run out and run away with each other and realize that, okay, there is something else on this ship and it is copying them for some reason. So they have these copies of themselves chasing after them down this huge hallway. And again, with the hokey CGI, they just keep growing bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And they blow up like these huge balloon characters on this huge giant walkway, to the point where they are now crammed into the spaceship and cannot move because they're just too big. And so Donna and Doctor keep running away. The part I did not mention is that you notice at the very beginning they're on this huge long like platform walkway on the ship, and there's a really old robot that is taking very, very slow steps down the walkway. And also there's this voice that comes on and says a word. You don't know what the word is, and but when he every time the word The man's voice says a word, a bunch of stuff on the ship like changes and reorganizes, and the little robot takes a step. And so we don't know what that's about, but that's going on in the background throughout all of this. All right, so they're running back down this walkway, and they're about to climb out of the area into, I don't know, the ducts or something. But of course, right at that moment, the voice goes off, a word is said. And a bunch of stuff shifts, and so they both end up falling out of this air part of the ship into another part of the ship, and now they're in sort of the work behind the scenes. And also, I'm backing up again, a part I missed is before you meet the doppelgangers, you get the sense that there's somebody else on the ship. Like they do these shots of like somebody watching them through, like the vents and behind walls and things, so you definitely get this like creepy vibe that there's somebody else there that they don't know about before that happens. And all of that is really well done, I think. So anyway, now they're running from the doppelgangers and they've been separated again, and they're running through the various like walkways on the ship. And again, each of them is met by their alternate doppelganger, who is not the correct, who's not like the real person, and they both have to like talk to each other to get the information from that doppelganger and figure out whether they're real or not. And it's interesting that it seems like the doctor isn't able to figure it out as well as Donna is. At least that's the impression I have at the end. But they both are having a hard time figuring it out of who's correct and who's not because the copies are so good and the copies have the memories of the actual doctor and Donna. Like they're copying everything, including their memories, which is interesting. And so Donna. The copy of Donna talks about having the doctor's memory at one point and knowing about the whole timeless child thing and that you don't know who you are, you don't know where you are, where you're from, you're not really from Gallifrey. And the doctor is really emotionally impacted by that and it comes back up again later at the end of the show, the end of the episode. I thought that was also really well done, and the way that that David Tennant and Catherine Tate really show great acting skills in playing the doppelgangers as against themselves, which is really interesting because most of this episode, there's some more people at the very end when they do the cliffhanger for next week. But if we discount that scene, which I think you should because it's really more a part of next week's episode than part of this week's, there's only four actors in this entire episode. There's two doctors and two Donnas. And so it's a really interesting little capsule episode in that way, which I thought they did a really good job with that. It doesn't feel empty. Well, take that back. It doesn't feel plotless or empty in a bad way. It feels empty in a scary way that really works. Because a lot of it is really pretty creepy. So they're running from the doppelgangers. They run into each other the wrong way before they finally catch each other, and you end up with all four in the room together. So you got two Donnas and two doctors in one room, and Doctor and Donna are trying to figure out which one's the correct one and which two are the doppelgangers. They're able to figure it out. They give each other a hug. The doppelgangers are coming after them, and they're trying to figure out what is going on here. And so we find out that these doppelganger creatures are creatures that have somehow some sort of consciousness, shape-shifting something that has been floating around at the edge of the universe and sort of watching things as it comes from the universe. I'm not sure how they're getting stuff from the universe this far out because we've established the light from the stars hasn't even made it out here yet. So I don't know how they got information about the universe out this far. That part doesn't quite make sense to me. Because you'd think light travels the fastest. So what are they getting? Because they're talking about how we have absorbed the, like, stuff from the universe, your wars and your hatred, and we want to come join your games and all this stuff, which I think was an it was a good villain. It made for an interesting good villain. I just am not sure on the exact specs, like science behind them having that information about the universe and the wars and things that are happening in the universe, if this light from the stars hasn't made it out this far yet, right? That is the part that I feels unclear to me. But we will bypass it because the rest of the episode is really good, and we'll just go with the fact that they have been floating on the edge of the universe, but not part of the universe, and have seen things from the universe. So just take that as acceptable and read. So these creatures are somehow able to shift and take over, and their plan is to take over the ship so that they could go back, fly it into the universe and take part and play the games, as they say. And so then we realize, or then you learn about the banging on the ship, which we talked about earlier. That turns out to be the captain of the ship who is dead and floating around the outside of the ship and banging into it. And we also realize that they had learned that there was the airlock seal had opened 3 years ago. And then closed again, and they didn't know why that had happened. And they had been speculating that these sort of creatures had gotten in doing that. And this is when they realized that no, those creatures had already been in. They didn't need to open the airlock door to come in. That was the captain going out and committing suicide, essentially. And then they're like, okay, well, why did the captain do that? Why would the captain have done that, right? And they don't know yet. That they're trying to figure it out. Well, Dr. and Donna are trying to figure it out. So are the doppelgangers. The doppelgangers want them to figure it out. And there's this really entertaining scene, I think, where the doppelgangers are stuck on the other side of this like glass wall. And they have figured out that the doctor and Donna need to think slowly. Slowly is what defeats these creatures, right? Like, the more you're thinking, the more your like adrenaline is rushing. That is what keeps you, like, is what helps them accelerate their learning process and become you, right? Take over you. Now, what that means for the doctor and Donna, like, long term, it didn't seem like there was any sort of threat to them from this process per se, but it seems like these copies now know they've got a better ship, right? The TARDIS is going to come back, and if those copies are exact perfect copies, they can get into the TARDIS and they can take the TARDIS off and be anywhere in time and space and take over the universe with their TARDIS. So it is sort of an, even though it is this little like capsule thing, it is sort of universe ending in its stakes. Right. So that's happening. And so it is revealed as you go through that the captain of the ship came up with a way to defeat these creatures. And so the captain set up a very slow self-destruct for the ship and then left the ship once they had that all set up. And died out in space, so that the creatures couldn't read their mind and figure out what they had done. They were able to somehow shield their thoughts, and because, and then they were using that really, really slow robot and the really slow change of things to do the countdown so that it would take a lot of time and the creatures wouldn't be able to figure it out because it would go so slow they wouldn't notice and wouldn't know what was happening. So the captain set this all up 3 years ago, and the TARDIS has delivered them at the very end of the countdown, and has apparently sped the countdown up, because this is the other part that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because those words are being said and the things are changing and the robot's taking a step, and they realize that this is a countdown. Which is fine, that's a really actually good reveal, love it, except if this countdown is supposed to have been going on for 3 years, and we've seen it happen like three, four times now, that makes no sense. The countdown is slow, but it's not that slow. I guess unless it was counting down from 100 or something, or even that would be too slow. Like they must have been counting down from a very high number for this to make any sense, because the countdown is happening relatively quickly. They're like started at 9 or 8 or something. I usually think of a countdown as 10, but now that I'm saying it out loud, I guess they can be counting down from whatever number they want to be counting down from. So maybe that's fine. Maybe it doesn't matter. But that was something that stuck out to me as a little odd, that the countdown is supposed to be taking 3 years, and yet it seemed like it what the countdown was happening from like 9 down pretty quickly, all things considered. So that's going on. They figure it out. The creatures figure it out because they figured it out and they know everything Donna and the doctor know. And so they're gonna go stop the robot from doing the self-destruct on the ship. And so the doctor and Donna are working to keep them from doing that. And then there's a really cool, again, sequence of them like running with weird CGI dog things through the ship to try and get to the robot, stop it from doing the self-destruct. Dr. and Donna are successful in keeping them from doing it. But then, of course, now the ship is going to self-destruct and they're all going to die. But of course, the TARDIS shows up. Yay! The TARDIS came back, and not to where they parked it originally, but to where they now are running around on the ship, which is a different place. Would like to throw that out there, that I don't know if that's something that matters, but it is slight, they are in a slightly different spot of the ship. The TARDIS reappears somewhere else. And the doctor's able to get in. And at this point, the doctor doppelganger is doing some weird CGI stuff. So you know that's not the actual doctor. So you know it's the actual doctor that got in the ship, got in the TARDIS. And then he does this weird thing that I don't know that I've seen them do with the TARDIS before, but I like it. The TARDIS is sort of floating. It didn't actually land. And so the doctor's able to put his foot out and like ride the TARDIS like a skateboard down the walkway thing that they're on. Honestly, seems like something the TARDIS should be able to do. I have no issues with like a discrepancy there or anything. I think that seems to work perfectly to me. I just thought it was funny. And I don't think I've seen them do it before, so I hope that this becomes a thing that the doctor does sometimes. If he needs to move the TARDIS, he lets the TARDIS float and just kind of rides it down a little bit. I thought that was entertaining. So then the self-destruct has happened. You see the flames start to go. And there's both Donnas there, and the doctor has to figure out which Donna to let onto the TARDIS. And he asks about her teacher. Okay, well, just something I didn't talk about. So she at the beginning of the episode, they're talking about the fact that the TARDIS was playing the Wild Blue Yonder song, which is the Air Force song from the US military, and how the Mrs. Bean, the head of the choir at Donna's school, had them sing that song, and that her grandfather Wilf had a problem with it and like told her that they shouldn't be doing that song because it's a war song, and you know, you shouldn't have kids singing a war song, is what she said, which I also noted as very strange. So maybe this is different in England. If I have any British listeners, or I'll look and see if there's any British viewers to see if they noted this, but I found it very, very odd that a child's choir in London would be singing the Air Force song. Now, maybe this song exists outside of the Air Force. What I have no idea of the history of the song. I might have to look it up. But I guess I obviously associate the Wild Blue Yonder song with the American Air Force. That is their like theme song. That's probably not the correct thing to say about a military force, but you know, it's their official song. We have different songs for the Army and the Marines and whatnot, and the Air Force. The Air Force is the Wild Blue Yonder, which is the connotation I have for that phrase. When I saw that that was what this episode was titled, I kind of assumed it wouldn't be a part of like with the American Air Force, but I thought maybe planes or something. I guess it kind of is. It's on a spaceship. That's almost a plane. I don't know. But either way, that was a connotation I have with that song. And I kind of would have assumed that it was written for the Air Force. I don't know. I might be completely off, and it might have a whole other history. So I'll have to look into that. Because it seemed odd to me, though, that, you know, British school children would be singing the American Air Force song in choir at school. That seemed so strange. So I'd be very interested to know if that is something that actually happens in British schools. Would like do British school children know this song and sing it in choir? Is it an actual song that people would sing in a choir setting? I don't know, it just seemed weird to me, but there you have it. So yeah, that struck me as odd. But anyway, this comes back up at the end because the doctor is now to determine who is the real Donna, is asking about Mrs. Bean, why is her name funny? And one of the Donnas says, because it's a woman's name, it's like a vegetable. And the other one just, because it just is. And he takes the one who says it just is. And he takes her in, closes the door, the TARDIS disappears, leaves the other Donna there. And it's very clear very quickly that that is the real Donna, and the doppelganger is the one on the TARDIS. And so you see the doppelganger on the TARDIS getting all excited and smiling and, ha ha ha, I've taken over, this is going to work. And you see the Donna that is left on the spaceship that is blowing up. You see the fire coming, and you see her, like, the look on her face is like, Catherine Tate did an amazing job right there. Like, the look on her face is perfect for this moment. And so they're starting to leave, and you're like, okay, the doctor has to figure this out and save her. And of course he does. He figures it out. He sh like has this weird, like, the TARDIS has this weird, like, ramp thing that rolls the not Donna doppelganger out of the TARDIS, and Donna's able to jump in, and they close the door, and they survive the blast, and they're able to come back to Earth. And that's the end of that story. It worked out really well. I think it was a really well done episode. I think that it really works. And it got some of that, you know, horror plot points in a way that I really enjoyed. I think it was a really well done episode. I did not find it as joyful as the Star Beast. I mean, if I was thinking about which episode I want to watch again, I'd probably go watch the Star Beast. I found that episode to be more fun to watch with all the different characters and Beep the Meep and all that stuff. I think that episode is more my style of wanting to rewatch, but this episode was really technically well done, I think. I really loved it. Having a great time. And then we get into the last scene, which is sort of a next time on, in my opinion. I think this is more of the cliffhanger for next week as opposed to anything to do with this week. Well, first they have a little heart to heart in the TARDIS at the end about where he brings up the fact that the Donna doppelganger knew about the timeless child and stuff in his head. And asks if Donna knows that, and Donna says no, she doesn't. It's just like it's too much. It's like looking into a fire or a furnace or something. Maybe because the doppelganger was some sort of wild space creature, it was more able to decipher that stuff. But, you know, what's going on? And she kind of tells the doctor that she's there for him if he needs her. And he says a little bit about the whole timeless child flux thing, but not a lot. Just sort of mentioning it and the emotional impact that it has, because he's like a huge section of the, you know, half the universe is gone because of me. On the other hand, half the universe exists because of him. So there you go. Yeah, so they have that nice little emotional scene. I liked it. It was cute. And then they land back in the alley in London, and Wilf is there, and I'm very excited to see Wilf. As you guys probably know, the actor who plays Wilf has since passed, and I believe that they wanted him to do more. They weren't able to do all the scenes they wanted to do, like he passed during the time of filming these episodes, which is sad. So he wasn't in the first one at all, but he was in this very last scene of the second one. And I assume he'll be in next week's a little bit more. I hope so anyway. But he's sitting there in his wheelchair waiting for them to come back, which is very exciting. And but then he says some stuff that they're like, wait, what, huh? Is something wrong? Because he says that he sent the rest of the family off into hiding and he said he'd wait there for the doctor. And then they look around and there's like a firebomb goes off and there's people like fighting in the street of this random street in London. And they're like, what in the world is happening here? And Wilf says that everyone's gotten mad and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they look into that. Or, well, they just kind of look around and, like, what is going on? And then that's the end of the episode. So we haven't figured out why everyone has gone mad. I'm assuming it has to do with the toy maker, because the toy maker is Neil Patrick Harris, who is the big baddie for the third episode, and we've seen some clips and pictures and things of that, so I'm very excited to see the toy maker come back. Well, toy maker come forward, because I've never seen the toy maker. I again have heard that the toy maker is a baddie from Classic Who that I have not seen ever before. I don't really know anything about. I'm assuming that it's a bad guy who like plays games and like with people as his toys, sort of. Unclear. I'm not sure on exactly how this works, but I'm excited for next week to find out. And I hope we get Donna's family more again, because Donna's family wasn't in this one at all, except for Wilf at the very, very end. So I am hoping right now for next week. I'm very excited for finding out anything about the toy maker and about them as a character and as a baddie who's taking over the world, apparently, and like what their motivations are and all of that. But also, I'm really hoping to get more of Donna's family again. I really loved the Star Beast last week, getting that whole group cast. So I'm hopeful that next week we get Unit back. I thought we were supposed to get Kate Stewart back. Kate Lethbridge Stewart back. So I hope she is back. I hope Unit's back. I hope the science officer from Star Beast is back. I forget her name, but the woman in the wheelchair who was fantastic. I hope she's back. I hope Rose and Donna's husband and Donna's mom and Donna's grandpa are all back. And that it's like the gang's all here sort of situation for next week's episode. Which could make sense with like this episode having so few characters, right? There's just literally, the actors are again Doctor and Donna. That's it. They're the only actors in the whole ham episode. They're obviously playing multiple characters, but it's just the two of them. So I And I loved it, but I'm ready for next week to be then. The groups, the gang's all here, lots of people, lots of stuff going on. And I'm very excited to see what'll happen with that. I'm having a really good time with these specials. I love that David Tennant is back. Although, again, I really liked Jodie Whittaker. I will agree that Chibnall's writing on some of the stuff wasn't the best. The whole Flux thing. I don't know. The Flux thing I didn't love. The Timeless Child thing I did. I did enjoy that. Yeah. But there are some banger episodes, and I love Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor. Love her so much. I wish she had more episodes of things and more fun stuff to do because I think she's great. But so I'm not saying that I love David Tennant back just because of that. Like because I feel like some people are like, oh, thank God it's back to being David Tennant because Jodie Whittaker was so bad, and I'm like, that I very much disagree with because Jodie Whittaker was amazing. But I'm glad to have David Tennant and Catherine Tate back anyway because they're fabulous too. And I'm having a really good time, so I am, fingers crossed, really hopeful for next week. I hope we end with a bang. Because so far, I think the first two episodes have been fabulous. So I'd love to hear what everybody thinks. If there's anything that you feel was really important that I missed or anything like that. Because I'm just going off of vibes here, but I really, really enjoyed the first two episodes so far, and we hope, very excited for the third to finish off this arc. And then for the Christmas episode, which is going to be Shuti Gatwar, our new doctor, coming in, which is also very exciting. So, yay, Doctor Who. I'm very happy for Doctor Who to finally be back. It seems like it's been forever since we've had the doctor, you know, because. I mean, Jodie Whittaker only had those two seasons, and then there were just those specials or whatever, I think. Was it two or three? It feels like Jodie didn't get that much time, and it feels like, so the last thing she had were those specials with the Flux, and that feels like it was a real long time ago. I have no idea when it aired, but it feels like forever ago. So I'm very excited the doctor is back, and yay! I'm having a good time. I hope you guys are having a good time with Doctor Who as well. And but I'll be back next week to talk about the third episode, The Giggle, which I am very excited about. And yeah, I'm very hopeful that it's going to be great and this whole three episode arc thing is going to be so much fun. I'll see you then. Bye.